FBS.
Tell me what you want.
The Forces Station.
60 years of the Red Arrows.
The sun makes an appearance on the West Apron at Keflavik Airport in Iceland as I move around an A400M and F-35B Lightning parked on the airfield. I triple-check my plans and briefly stop to look at the vast layout of the airfield and surrounding terrain, hoping the not-so-distant and very angry volcano wouldn't pick today to finally give us a piece of its mind. As I push that thought down, along with my notebook into my pocket, I watch the small team of RAF personnel in blue suits move about the tarmac with a relaxed but busy pace. They work fluidly and without a fuss, marking lines, moving equipment, occasionally looking upward, occasionally looking over at the small crowd cordoned off just along the apron. These personnel seem unfazed. This appears to be business as usual for the blue suits, and it's very apparent to me this is not their first rodeo. Unlike the 30-plus group assembled just behind the makeshift barrier. A mix of global media outlets, dignitaries, and onlookers chatter, adjust their issued high-vis, set up cameras and equipment, and ready their phones. An excited energy bubbles in this gathering. They look in all directions, putting their hands up to shield their eyes from the Icelandic rays. Some have binoculars. Others track aircraft movements on scanning apps and report updates to the group whilst occasionally pointing at something they can almost make out. And then we hear over the radio the confirmation we've been waiting for. The F-35B Lightning from 617 Squadron has intercepted two P-8 Poseidons, an A-400M and 12 T-1 Hawks over the North Atlantic.
The Forces Station.
The RAF aerobatic display team, the Red Arrows, have arrived in Iceland on the first leg of their journey to Canada to mark their 60th diamond display season. The next part of their journey will see them fly to Greenland before touching down in Goose Bay in Canada, where they'll attend a series of flypasts and airshow displays over the next 5 weeks. Referred to as Exercise Maple Hawk, the tour has been in planning for over 2 years, and displays will include the Diamond 9 formation and, of course, the world-famous red, white and blue smoke across famous landmarks and cities over East Canada.
As cameras clicked and people strained to get a better view as the Red Arrows touched down in Iceland, I reflected on the team's humble beginnings. The year was 1964, and they were concerned that pilots were spending too much time practicing formation aerobatics rather than operational flying. There were several unofficial teams that had been sponsored by RAF commands, including the Black Arrows, the Blue Diamonds, and the Yellow Jacks. But a new team emerged that would be tasked with all RAF aerobatic flying. Taking its name from the Red Pelicans and the Black Arrows, this new team flew under the motto Éclat, the French word meaning brilliance or excellence. This new team would be called the Red Arrows.
Stornoway Harbour. A party of trippers on a fishing expedition. But these trippers are different. These men are the core of a small elite group. They call themselves the Red Arrows.
I don't know whether elite's quite the right word. The thing is that we're doing a very specialised job, even within the Air Force, very specialised in everyday terms.
Peter McIntosh, team manager.
Techniques involved professionally and the way we operate and the way that affects our social life means that we're in a very, very closed environment, which is physically difficult for other people to even understand. So this tends to cut us off a bit and make us even more a small group, rather obviously so.
Briefly disbanded at the end of 1965, less than 12 months later, the Red Arrows were wowing crowds and pushing the envelope of aerobatics.
There's a certain amount of kudos in flying, as they might put it, these sharp-looking aeroplanes around Europe. The Red Arrows are regarded with a well-earned respect by the professional flyer. They're acknowledged as one of the best aerobatic teams in the world. They have the complete unflappability and gentle arrogance that comes from rigorous training and an unswerving devotion to the business of flying aerobatics.
And the fascination with them is as strong today as it was back then.
Yesterday they were in North Devon. Tomorrow they'll be in Iceland. 2 days later they might be back here again, and yet again they might not. The only certainty in their lives is that of uncertainty.
As 60 years rolled by, the Red Arrows became a household name and part of the fabric of life, not just for the armed forces, but for the UK itself. Strengthening international relationships, supporting trade deals, and promoting UK aerospace industry and even recruitment. The team have taken part in over 5,000 displays in over 60 countries. And as I joined them in Iceland ahead of the transit to Canada for Exercise Maple Hawk, I had one mission in mind: to learn why the public are still fascinated by the Red Arrows. ...2024 was no doubt an important year for the Red Arrows, but also for the Royal Canadian Air Force, who celebrated their centenary.
It is with great pride and admiration that I extend the RAF's heartfelt congratulations to each and every member of your esteemed force for all that you have achieved throughout your proud history.
Air Chief Marshal, Chief of the Air Staff, Sir Richard Knighton.
Since your inception in 1924, you have played a pivotal role in safeguarding the skies, defending Canada's interests, and contributing to global peace and security. Your contributions have shaped our joint history and will continue to inspire generations to come.
It will be an entire year of celebration and remembrance, as well as building on the future. And by special invitation, an ally and friend to Canada, the UK, represented by the Red Arrows.
We are honoured to have been asked to participate in the RCAF 100 celebrations this year. Our aerobatic team, the Red Arrows, will tour Canada in August and September. I look forward to seeing you and your legacy continue to endure and our partnership grow ever stronger in this modern, contested world.
And in such an important year for both services, the displays must demonstrate nothing less than excellence. And Wing Commander Adam Collins, Officer Commanding of the Red Arrows, talked me through what the crowds could expect over the Canadian skies.
So this year, it's a new show as always. We change the show each year. There are some core ingredients, if you like, that stay the same. We'll bring some manoeuvres back that the crowd really like. But this year, we've brought in a few new ones as well, and some that haven't been seen for a long time. So the way we start the second half is a manoeuvre that was last flown over 20 years ago. But really, it's that well-known recipe of the first half of the show being all nine aircraft doing the graceful looping and rolling manoeuvres. Then as we go into the second half, we split into the four and the five section, the opposition solos, or the synchro pair as we call them, for the much more dynamic and aggressive manoeuvring with the red, white and blue smoke. So it's a tried and tested recipe, and hopefully the audiences in Canada will love it as much as they do in the UK.
As the 12 Hawks journeyed on to Greenland, I joined the small detachment flying straight to Goose Bay in Canada that would set up for their arrival. Senior Engineering Officer Squadron Leader King welcomed me to the team and talked me through what would happen when we touched down.
So as soon as we land in Canada, the team are going to jump off the back, make sure we've got the chocks and the parking slots laid out so that when the jets arrive, we can hop straight to it. The way we're doing the transit across the Atlantic is with two different A400s who are flip-flopping one over the other to make sure we've always got a ground support team on the ground, make sure we can always fix any faults, refuel. One of the challenging things we have to do because of the distance is a gravity refuel, which means we have to put in some extra fuel in the top of the aircraft, not pressurised, meaning taking off some of the panels and antenna as well.
And we're talking about a 50-year-old aircraft here. This all has to be done on the ground. There's no air-to-air refuelling with the Hawk.
No, absolutely not. The Hawk can't air-to-air refuel. It's a very basic aircraft in general, to be honest. A lot of the avionics is quite basic, but it doesn't matter what the age is. We take great care of it. They look great, and they're always a charmer for the crowd.
So how many people do you think we have on board the A400 as we speak?
So there's 30 people on the A400, including the A400 crew. They form a massive, important part of this trail as well. Engineering-wise, we've got about 15 people. then got a supplier, an admin, and a survival equipment technician as well to make sure we've got a full support team wherever we go.
When you think about the Red Arrows, you think about those 12 hawks, but there are so many people involved in keeping the Red Arrows in the sky.
Absolutely. I always describe the Red Arrows as a machine that's just got so many different cogs that make it tick. We're arguably one of the most agile units within the Royal Air Force. We pick up and go somewhere new every weekend around the UK. We do tours like this quite regularly as well, often going to far and new places, again, with that limited range and capability because of the 50-year-old airframe.
As the Hawk T1 marked its 50th birthday, the complexities and challenges of flying an aircraft of this vintage were demonstrated in the final leg from Greenland to Canada. The Hawk has a flying time of around 1 hour 45 minutes, so adverse weather conditions can greatly affect the Red Arrow's time in the air. We needed the weather to work in our favour to ensure safe arrival of the rest of the team in Canada, but unfortunately, as the forward party waited, the weather sent us our first obstacle.
It's good to be here after a couple of days delayed. It's always difficult getting 12 single-engine aeroplanes that were built in the 1980s over to Canada this far away from our home.
Red Arrow's team leader, Squadron Leader John Bond, Red One.
We kind of needed three things for our transit from Greenland to here in Goose Bay, which were kind of against us over the last 48 hours. So I needed good weather in Narsarsuaq, our base at Greenland. That was just in case any aircraft had an emergency and needed to return back to land in Greenland, because there's no other airfields within about 300 miles that we can use. So I needed good weather there. I also needed some favourable winds. With a single-engine Hawk, we only have limited fuel. We can only go for about an hour 50. And there were some really strong headwinds in the jet stream yesterday, kind of up to 50, 60 knots in the face on the transit to Canada. So that was kind of up against us as well. It was right on our limit of what we could take. And the weather at Goose Bay was okay to land, but it would have required an instrument approach, which obviously takes more fuel. So the decision based on all those three factors was that it wasn't fit to continue. So over the last 2 days, we've been monitoring, and today we found the favourable spot. So we had light winds. We actually had a bit of a tailwind over from Greenland. The weather was beautiful in Narsarsuaq. And the weather's lovely here today. So everything, all those three things were ticked and called green. So we transited over about 2 hours ago.
The Blues busied themselves to ensure the 50-year-old aircraft would be ready to move. And as the team waited, Sengo, Squadron Leader Andy King, gave me a tour of the famous aircraft.
The Red Arrows fly an aircraft called the BAE Systems Hawk Mark T1. So it's originally a training aircraft, so you'll see it's got two seats. That's so that the instructor can sit in the back and the trainee can sit in the front. We don't use it for that purpose, so the pilot always sits in the front seat. And what we have is a travelling team of engineers and one photographer as well called the Circus. So they sit in the back seat when we do transits, but not in displays. And that means we've got a mobile team on the ground everywhere we go. One of the unique things about actually that we've done to the aircraft is converted the back cockpit with a modification that stops the master controls in the back overriding what the pilot's doing in the front. Working around the aircraft is something people commonly ask is around whether we put the numbers on the aircraft. So we don't do that because fleet management's a really important part of my role in terms of rotating, fatigue and engine life. Different positions use different amounts. What we try and do over the course of a season is spread out the life of all the aircraft so they're the same. So each aircraft does have a pilot's name and also the circus member's name on the side. This aircraft here, XX319, has actually got Squadron Leader Henry Prince, who unfortunately died this year. He's one of the founding members of the Red Arrows, so we've put that on as a little bit of a token to him on the 12th aircraft as well. The aircraft's pretty good. It's really self-sustainable, so we don't really need a lot to take away with it. So there's interesting features like the footsteps on the side. So this enables the pilot and the rear crew to be able to access the cockpit without any sort of support or ladders. So a lot larger aircraft have the problem of how you get in the aircraft without that. This just means we can land anywhere in the world, jump out, service, jump back in, and that's great. Avionics-wise, there's a panel in here. That's about as complex as the aircraft gets in terms of electronics. Most of it's 50 years old. The Hawk's 50 years old this year as well. The Reds have been flying it for about 45 years, but the oldest aircraft we have is actually came into service in 1977. We haven't really done a lot in terms of the way of modification. So what you see in here is pretty much as you get in terms of avionics. So this is where all the processing happens really. It takes all the information and just puts it into the instruments in the cockpit, all of which are analog other than the global positioning system just up the top. got. So the aircraft, it has two intakes, one on each side, but it's only a single engine. That just enables us to get an equal flow on both sides. Down the wing, so it's very traditionally designed in terms of the way it works as an aircraft. So it's got a main plane and a tail plane at the back. What that does is it means it's really great for formation aerobatics because it's really stable. Modern fast jet aircraft are built with a delta wing, are designed to be a lot more unstable, a lot more manoeuvrable, but that wouldn't necessarily be great in a display where you've got nine aircraft close to each other. Other interesting features that people ask about a lot are what these toblerones are on the front. So essentially that's a stall inducer. So what it does is if you reach too high an angle of attack, it creates a turbulent wake over the top. The aircraft starts buffeting and it means the pilot knows he's going to stall before he actually does. We've also got vortex inducers here and a wing fence, so this creates a turbulent wake over the wing, which means that the flow just sticks to it a lot better. It gives you a lot better control in the air. And the wing fence separates the flow between the main aircraft surface for lift and the outside surface for control. So the ailerons on the outside, that's how we get the roll on the aircraft as well. Unlike a commercial airliner, fast jets, you tend to turn on your side and then turn up to turn rather than just turning slowly. Special for this year is the 60th Diamond Season artwork. So we've got decal on the side and also on the tail as well. Quite a simple design, but I think it looks really nice, particularly effective when you're just looking down the line of sort of all the aircraft parked in a row. It looks really smart, but it's very clear what it says and what it does. Tail plane, it's not particularly unique to the Hawk, but it's quite an interesting feature. So there's no individual control surface on this. If you look at the type of aircraft that you go on holiday on, it'll have a little flap similar to the aileron and it'll steer via that. The tail plane on a Hawk is completely movable, so this whole item moves together on a single joint and it gives you really good control in the air, the ability to tightly turn and apply quite a lot of g-forces as well. Like I said, when we turn sideways, we still then use this to turn sideways once we've rolled in as well. Underneath the aircraft, you'll notice the smoke pod. One of the things that's unique about the Red Arrows jet, it's a converted fuel tank. What it does, it has three sections. So we've got 1 minute of blue smoke, 1 minute of red smoke, and then 5 minutes of white smoke in the middle. What that does is it's fed up through a series of pipes inside the fuselage, which then come round to these three injection pipes. Common rumour that people think is that obviously we fly with three colours, blue, white and red, that there'd be one pipe for each. That's wrong. All three colours come out of all three pipes. What that does for us is gives us a really deep concentration of colour. The diesel then gets vaporised, gives us our sort of famous smoke. And I think the smoke's one of the things that is definitely one of the things that we're best at in the world. Another little trick of the trade that we use as well is to put the air brake out. So by putting the air brake down when we're flying in a formation and smoking, it creates a massive turbulent wake down the back of the aircraft. What that does is it means we've got a really vibrant plume that's quite large with triple the concentration of other teams. And that, I think that's why our smoke looks so great. Just little tricks like that to make it be more effective, last a lot longer. We can use different concentrations of dye as well. So in the blue and the red, we can either use single strength, double strength, or up to about 2.5 to 3 times strength. That depends on the sort of the profile of the display or how much dye we've got available to us. So things like the coronation flypass or the annual flypass we do in front of Buckingham Palace, we tend to do triple strength. Big shows abroad where we're representing the UK as well, we tend to use double strength. So the colours look great.
And the sunshine finally making an appearance, we were soon on the move again from Goose Bay to Airshow Atlantic, Greenwood, Nova Scotia. The crowds turned out en masse, and in the sunshine, the Reds painted the sky with their famous red, white and blue smoke.
I'm Pam Shepherd. I'm just very excited to see everything, and I've heard amazing things about the Red Arrows, so I cannot wait to see you guys.
Well, have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for coming to say hello.
No, thank you, and thank you guys for coming to Greenwood.
Awesome. It's gorgeous.
What was your favourite bit?
The 4 or 5, the split. I mean, that was amazing. Just going like this.
And have you seen anything like that before?
No, not that many aircraft at one time. I've seen the Blue Angels, not that many aircraft. And that's what's getting me is that 9 aircraft in the air one time in formation is just absolutely fantastic.
As the Blues worked to prepare the aircraft for the next move, the transit from Greenwood for over 100 personnel consisted of road travel and flights to our next location, Toronto.
My name is Paul Dowers, a logistics officer by trade. So I'm here as a deployed logistics group commander, which means I oversee all the supply, the MT, and all the movement on the ground here.
Not an easy task to manage for MT, who were assigned to the detachment.
We've got 120 personnel here, and we've actually got a road move coming up, and that's actually a six-hour move. So that's loading up all the kit and equipment that the engineers use, also the personnel and all their baggage as well. So obviously a five-week trip, that's a lot of kit. So yeah, it's going to be a busy day.
What's the most difficult part of your job?
I think the most difficult part of the job is actually just trying to bring all those different organisations together. So obviously we're working with the Canadians, but when we've got people that are spread out across different camps, different nations, it becomes really hard to bring all those people together to make sure the operation goes successfully. We've got about 35 different vehicles here on hire, but on top of that, the personnel that we bring are specialised. So obviously our mechanical transport drivers make sure that everybody's safe, that they've done all their licences and they can drive safe here in Canada.
And the team security is paramount. Ensuring safe passage and the smooth running of public events is down to a small team of military police.
Flight Attendant Alexandra Robinson, I'm the Detachment Security Officer for Exercise Maple Hawk 24.
Hi, I'm Corporal McShave. I'm also part of the security team out here doing the protective security, looking after the personnel and the jets while they're in different locations that aren't military-based.
Our job is to liaise with the local civilian population and police to make sure that there's no no-go areas, as it were.
Do you send out military police on an operation or an exercise of this nature every single time they go?
It would normally be wherever there's aircraft and people, there'd normally be a police element to support, yes.
You've been so involved with the public on this detachment. You've been meeting people. People want to get their photographs taken with you. What is that like for you in your role?
It's quite different compared to what we normally do back in the UK. It's nice to get involved with the general public.
And have you been enjoying it?
I've had the best time.
1, 2, 3. BFBS. 60 years of the Red Arrows.
The Forces Station.
One of the standout parts of Exercise Maple Hawk for me was meeting the people who came to see the Red Arrows.
From children.
Hello, Red Arrows. I like you when you do all the smokes and stuff. Like it when you fly all around the skies.
Through to the slightly more mature.
I'm Betty Walker.
Bessie, someone told me that you're celebrating a birthday this week. So may I ask how many candles we're putting on the cake?
Candles. Oh my God. You better call out the fire department. 96.
Airshow veteran Bessie Walker has been a volunteer at the Toronto Airshow for over 40 years.
You meet so many wonderful people. They're all such upright folk and just a pleasure to be around.
What is your favourite part of the airshow? Because you've obviously seen so many.
Truly, the Red Arrow. They're my best favourite. I've seen them in Britain. I've seen them here, and I daresn't say that I like anything better than the snowbirds, but the Red Arrows are awful special.
That is quite a compliment indeed, given the fact that you've seen so many.
I enjoy the air show itself. My husband was in the Air Force in the war. That's, of course, where it all started. I just enjoy it all.
Beautiful. Couldn't do better. Oh, loved it.
We always support the Red Arrows when they come over.
Why is that? Is it just a little taste of home? Or?
One, because it is a taste of home, and two, my son is an absolute aviation fanatic. He just loves airplanes, so we just always come out for airplanes anyway, but in particular the Red Arrow.
Thank you for coming to Canada.
My name is James Olmsted, and I've been an aircraft mechanic for the past 38 years, largely due to the impact that my meeting with the Red Arrows had when I was 7 years old in Nice, France in 1970. They basically adopted me and gave me elite access to a tarmac tour of one of their NAT trainers and a Hercules aircraft. And they were just the most admirable fellows that a young man could meet. And they influenced me for my career choice.
So what did it mean for you to be able to be here and meet the team all these years later on and tell them your story?
It's actually pretty emotional.
Now, you've brought along some paraphernalia that you've held on to all of these years. The display team from the 70s, they've all signed it for you. There's letters of correspondence, you know, that have the Red Arrows have written back and forth to you and your family. That's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
The Red Arrows and all of the team are champion ambassadors for Commonwealth relations. This is what we need to remember. The world needs this kind of unity, and there is no better way to highlight it than an aerobatic display team.
So that red, white, and blue smoke, that brought back some memories for you?
Brilliant. It has just been such an experience, and everyone I've met in this year's tour from mechanics to Red One and security people and other people in RAF uniforms have just been superb diplomats.
But look, I really hope you enjoy your evening. It was an absolute pleasure to bump into you. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's a real pleasure meeting you.
Next stop, Airshow London, London, Ontario. And whilst the rain made scheduled flypasts over Niagara Falls and the airshow itself difficult, it didn't stop the Red Arrows from flying as the Blues ensured they kept that aircraft in the sky.
So it absolutely falls to every single person. I'm incredibly lucky, the fact that everybody in the Red Arrows is really motivated about their job. Everyone's really passionate about aviation, passionate about representing the Royal Air Force and the United Kingdom.
Senior Engineering Officer, Squadron Leader Andy King.
What's great is the fact the team's so diverse as well. So we've got 13 different roles of people in the Blues, and that's really unique to the Royal Air Force Red Arrows. So that, it kind of drives it really. Everyone pulls together, everyone knows their job and they do that. And by everyone working hard, it kind of motivates everyone else to do the same as well. It's a little bit like a self-fulfilling prophecy, but that takes individual hard work by every single person to actually make that happen.
I took the opportunity to find out more about the Red Arrows engineering technicians and support staff, known as the Blues.
I'm AS1 Jess Rogers, and I'm a mechanical technician. Mechs have a lot to do on this aircraft. It's obviously very old, so it's mech heavy. We work on pretty much anything, the airframe, hydraulic systems, fuels, engines, pretty much anything. So it kind of just depends what comes up day to day, like faults and stuff, so keeps you on your toes.
I'm AS1 Lily Holford, and I'm an avionics technician. So radios, transponder, lighting, any electrical fault like we deal with. On the electrical side, say on the line you'd come in, you'd service the jets, you'd wait for the pilots to the warp, then you'd see them in and off, then service them when they landed again. Or if you're on the rec side that day, you'd wait till they came back, see if they needed any life in, or if they've got any faults, then you'd work to fix them. So on the avionics side, it's quite small. I think there's 20 of us that have came away. It's a mech-heavy jet, so there's a lot more mechs. But as a team, I think there's 120 of us out here, so a large amount.
Flight Attendant Jack to school, mister.
Okay, Jack, tell me a little bit about your role with the Red Arrows.
So my role, I'm the Junior Engineering Officer, one of two on the team. And for the last 2 years, I've flown as what we call Circus One. So we are the deployable engineering team. We fly in the back seat on the transits with the team. So when we go from place to place, we'll then get out, we'll service the aircraft, we'll make sure they're all airworthy, and we'll launch them for the display. So that's our role.
Hawk is now 50 years old, but it's like a classic sports car, right? You look after it, it looks after you?
Yeah, that's it. You know, the jet has been with us for a long time. And it's all about managing the fatigue and making sure if we look after the aircraft, it'll last us a long time. The inspections, you know, we do a lot of inspections. We make sure that the aircraft is airworthy, and it takes a big team to do it. You see the newer aircraft, like your Typhoons, where you've got a lot of systems that'll tell you if there's something wrong, whereas we rely on inspections, and, you know, the guys are looking for leaks all the time, and then that's why we've got a big engineering team here, so if there is something wrong, then we can turn it around in a quick time. So,
as an outsider looking in, is that generally how you function? So it's always inspections, you're not waiting for something to go wrong, you're looking for stuff to make sure everything is perfect?
Yeah, it's a mix of both. So I'd say very much if you compare taking your car to the garage for a service, we do that after every flight. So where your mechanic would potentially tell you, or your brake pads are worn, or you need to replace your tyres, whatever, we do that after every flight. But then if the aircrew land and they feel like they found something wrong with the aircraft, we'll investigate it and maybe find the fault, and then we'll be able to fix it. So it's a mix of both. During the winter periods, we're doing a lot of maintenance on the aircraft to prepare them for, you know, the vigorous flying that they do in the summer as well. So it's a balance. And each of the aircraft, clearly being old, we need to manage the fatigue, so we'll fly them in different positions to make sure that they can last a long time.
Yeah, okay. Now, when you're flying in the aircraft, I mean, first of all, that must be an incredible day at the office. But secondly, because you know this aircraft inside out, that seat in the aircraft is crucial for this kind of maintenance, because you're on the lookout for any issues?
Yeah, so when we're flying in the back seat, it's all the pilot. You know, we're there kind of for the ride. We do help out with looking for other aircraft, and if they did ask us to do something, then I'm sure they would. And there's been a few times, not this year, but last year, where potentially on startup, whatever, the pilot had a potential, you know, an issue, and then we're in the back to be able to help. But we're mainly there, obviously, to transit. But it's an absolutely amazing experience. Some of the flypasts I've done, like the Coronation flypast, you know, unforgettable. And then to land and get out, you know, you have to kind of calm yourself down, because you've got a safety critical role to make sure, you know, you can turn the aircraft ready for the next display. Yeah, it's a great job, and I'm really, really happy and proud I'm doing it, so.
Was this the dream when you were growing up?
So I always wanted to join the Air Force. I didn't quite think I'd be doing what I'm doing now, seeing the red arrows at my local air show. But yeah, it's a fantastic role, and everyone on the team really, really enjoys it. So.
And if you could pick a career highlight, because you've been with the team for a little while now, what would it be?
I would say the whole coronation day for me. It was waking up in the morning, kind of not knowing what we're going to go into work to with the state of the aircraft and obviously the managing the fleet. And then I had an interview on ITV live, which was, again, very, very weird for me. And then just getting in the aircraft, flying over the palace. And then it was all over in a second. Then we landed, had to turn the aircraft, and we were out to Nice to carry on for the spring training. So it was just, the whole experience was kind of breathtaking, but it's one I'm never, ever going to forget.
Hi, my name's Corporal Jessica Ware. So my role with the Red Arrows as Circa 6 is the documentation controller. I'm in charge of making sure that all of the aircraft paperwork is safe and ready to go. It's all been coordinated. There's no outstanding jobs, no pending work coming up that could potentially cause detrimental effect to the aircraft.
And I suppose delays as well, like if the aircraft hasn't got the paperwork in its correct order, that could be a big problem.
Absolutely. It's one of the final things that's done before the aircrew come and sign the aircraft out. So yeah, it's incredibly important to have that sorted.
Now, all of this paperwork that you're talking about, you're going to do this when you're outside on the pan, you're looking at what the teams are doing and curating all this information as you go along, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Obviously, the paperwork travels with the aircraft. The front half will have the rear half paperwork and all vice versa. Should there be an incident on the way, we've still got all the live signatures for the aircraft. So when that arrives, the first thing is get the aircraft's paperwork, have the pilot sign the aircraft back over to the engineers. From there, then I can start, like you say, raising the servicings and coordinating things.
When they arrive, run me through what will happen.
So the first thing they'll do is the line teams will go out and they will see the jets in. Once the jets are stopped, locked and secure, the pilots will then get out. The teams will start servicing the aircraft while I'm doing the paperwork. Other teams will be doing the refuels, will have to replace the oxygen. So there's quite a lot going on as a team. Once that's all done and comes together, they'll all sign for their parts of the task. Once that's done, I can then go through, make sure nothing's been missed, make sure it's all good. Once I'm happy, I'll report to the circus lead, and he will then inform the pilots that the aircraft are ready to go.
If we look at the time frame that this turnaround is going to happen, what, a couple of hours?
Yeah, it's literally a couple of hours, so it's not long at all.
So it's business as usual for the RAFAT team, basically?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is the best thing about your job? Like, what do you really enjoy?
Oh, it's got to be the flying, hasn't it? Without a doubt. Getting in the back and having an office view like that, flying over Canada, cruising up and down the UK in a red jet. It's out of this world. I have to pinch myself every time I'm getting in.
So I'm Sergeant Chris Pater, and I am currently RAFAT's Logistics Senior NCO.
Chris, talk to me about the day job. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so our daily business on RAFAT as logistics support is basically, in a nutshell, getting any mission critical or aircraft requirements, be it state requirements, basically anything that can keep the aircraft serviceable and able to perform its primary role.
Well, that must keep you enormously busy, because Hawk is a 50-year-old aircraft, so you've got to treat them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The problem we've got at the minute, which is, yeah, everyone's well aware of, is the lack of spares. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest issue we've got, especially on the build-up to Exercise Springhawk and Exercise Maplehawk, where we're trying to get the PEP, which is the primary equipment pack, which is basically, in a nutshell again, a big metal box which holds everything that the aircraft may need when we're deployed. So, yeah, so trying to get that up to a percentage of above 95%, which is the target that I aim for, is massively, massively challenging.
That PIP that you're talking about, does that go into the aircraft and you travel with that, or is that something that you move with the A400?
Yeah, so using Canada as basically an example, we trailed, obviously, from Lincoln up north, across to Iceland, Greenland, and then into Nova Scotia, and I was part of the trail team, so I was in the back of the A400, and yeah, you're quite right in saying the PEP was on board, ready to support the aircraft should we get any sort of dramas along the way.
There's loads of you that look after this aircraft. You work really well as a team, that much is evident to me. You enjoy each other's company, even though there's hard work. The friendship, I think, is really key amongst your team.
Yeah, absolutely, I couldn't agree anymore. It's more, and as cliche as it sounds, it's more like a family really than a workplace. And yeah, I must admit personally, I do get out of bed with a nice little spring in my step every morning knowing I'm coming to support the Red Arrows.
Now, you've been with the Red Arrows for a really long time. Is there any sort of career highlight that you can think about or a time that you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, so my personal highlight is was my first Springhawk, one of the main calendar points. Springhawk is when we go away post-winter line, where the pilots will be training on the build-up to the Diamond 9. And then, yeah, we go to Springhawk with the target of Public Display Authority. From a logistics sort of like perspective, making sure, again, the jets were all serviceable on the build-up to the Public Display Authority, it was a massive achievement, in particular when one of the aircraft required an engine, which was logistically a bit of a nightmare and the main probably thing that you wouldn't want to happen when you're on a location away from your MOB. The MOB for us is currently RAF Waddington, which is our main operating base. And managing to get that between myself and my team, and is coupled with a bit of engine support as well, we managed to get an engine into location, into Greece, within 72 hours, and managed to get the aircraft back airborne in time for Public Display Authority. So yeah, that's probably my personal highlight.
As the red, white and blue lit up the skies once more, Corporal Liam and all of the DIE team watched on. Like so many of the Blues, critiquing their own work and ensuring every second of smoke on was the best it could be.
As the command is given from Red One, that iconic red, white and blue smoke is down to two hard-working teams on the ground known as the DIE teams.
So I'm Corporal Liam Padgett. I'm one of the two DIE team leaders on the Red Arrows DIE team this year, which is made up of seven people. We split into two teams so we can both go to two different locations when the aircraft are transiting around, and our prime role is to put the colour into the aircraft.
How do you get that smoke up into the sky?
So we have two machines that we call DIE rigs. The DIE comes to us in barrels, which we then put into the rig, and then when the aircraft land and they shut down, we then come out as a team and connect hoses up to the front of the smoke pod, which is situated on the belly of the aircraft. And then the rig has a pump on it, which will basically pump the liquid into the smoke pod ready for the next display.
How much smoke are they carrying on board?
Typically we have 1 minute of blue, 1 minute of red and 5 minutes of white. So the smoke pod divided into three separate tanks, and then the air crew will then decide when to turn the smoke on and off during the display. So typically the white smoke is the one they use the most if you actually watch the display. The colour will only be on momentarily for like 5 to 10 seconds, which means that the tank is only 1 minute, but it will last the whole display.
And I mean, you have to be so precise because all of this is kind of hanging on you making that incredible colourful smoke that we all enjoy. Do you feel that pressure as a team?
Yeah, we put it on ourselves though, because we have a lot of pride in our job. We want the colour to be as vibrant as possible because, you know, it does look better. And there's always a bit of an element of competition between other display teams. We want to look the best. We want to have the best colours.
Does the formula change for the weather, for the location, for the time of year, or is it just the same?
So the DIE is always standard. It always comes as its strength it does in the barrel. A typical strength DIE, which would be one barrel in the rig. So special displays, and especially over here, we do what we call double strength. So we'll put two barrels in the rig of each colour, which will make the colour a lot more vibrant and pop in the sky when it's up there.
How do you judge if it's been a good display or a bad display? Like, what are you looking for?
I mean, we're all really hypercritical of ourselves, so if the colour doesn't look extremely strong in the sky, we're always looking for ways to make it stronger. But from what I've seen so far, the colour's looking pretty good.
Now, the pilots, so you've done your job. What do they have to do to make that smoke work in the sky?
So basically, on the control column, there's three buttons, one for each colour in a certain position, and they'll make a call, so it's like smoke on go or colour on go, and then they'll press the button, which sends air pressure from the engine into the smoke pod, and then sends the liquid DIE out to the back of the exhaust, and it vaporises, which creates the smoke trail in the sky that you see.
Another key part of the Red Arrows support team is Circus. 10 aircraft engineering technicians and one photographer fly in the passenger seat of the Hawk to and from display airfields and service the aircraft before and after every single display. Whilst the technicians work hard to keep the aircraft flying, one photographer is tasked with capturing everything that happens in the sky.
Corporal Phil DIE, Circus 10. One of the unique jobs about the Red Arrows photography team is one of the years you get to fly in the back seat with Red 10 as Circus 10, and you get to capture all the air-to-air photography, the fly pass, the mixed formation fly pass currently with the snowbirds. We also get to photo chase the displays, the practice displays, which turn out to be amazing imagery from a very unique standpoint. I find myself very lucky. I think I've got a very unique job.
I'll say, the amount of people that have come up and asked me, can they go for a ride with the Red Arrows, it's not quite that straightforward. So tell me about the training that you've had to undergo so that you can go in that aircraft.
We require to do specialist training, a bit like the pilots, so we know how to experience high altitude, high pressure breathing. We have to go through the centrifuge so we can experience G-force. This is all before we get into the aircraft, all the safety elements that go into flying in a fast jet aircraft, so we know what to do if the worst case scenario. And then that's finished off with a practice flight to make sure we definitely can sustain ourselves in the back whilst taking the photographs.
Squadron Leader Grey Muscat, Red 10.
Let me ask you, sir, when you're flying on these photo chasers, it looks like you have to be so incredibly rapid. What's the difference between flying there and then in formation?
Well, we're kind of in formation, but loose formation, because I have to be close enough so that Phil can capture the images. And obviously, he can't swap lenses in the cockpit, so we're stuck with the lens that he's got, so we do a lot of talking to each other. And we plan it, and every show that we do or every photo chase that we do, I try and come up with a different idea. But there were times yesterday when I wasn't in the right place, and it was incredibly frustrating because I thought I could get myself right and then we were behind it. And Phil's, I can hear his disappointment in the back cockpit. He's like, you need to get forward. I'm like, I haven't got enough power to get in, Phil. That's all I've got. So it's frustrating for me as well. But also I have to be mindful that Phil's not been flying as long as I have. He's not used to the G-force that I'm used to. So therefore, when I kind of get the speed up and start pulling back on the stick, I've got to be mindful that Phil's in the back, and obviously he's carrying a camera as well. Yeah. So it's hard work for him, and we do a lot of talking, we do communicate really well in the cockpit. And if we miss the shot, we miss the shot. We'll reposition, we'll try and go for something else.
And after another successful air show, we were on the move again. This time to Aero Gatineau in Ottawa. Along with performing flypasts and aerobatics, the Red Arrows also undertook many other interesting PR duties. There were wreath-laying ceremonies for Commonwealth troops at local cemeteries.
It was great to go to the Beechwood Cemetery today and see how the Royal Canadian Air Force and the Canadian Defence Forces celebrate their warriors that have gone before them.
Commander of the Display Air Wing, Group Captain Robbie Lees.
We're here celebrating our 60th anniversary, celebrating the 100th anniversary and the centennial with the Royal Canadian Air Force. And as we celebrate those anniversaries and we look forward, it's great to look backwards and remember those that have come before us and on whose shoulders we stand.
As a member of the Commonwealth and looking around, so many different people from different nations, allies that have been laid to rest in such a beautiful place, it was a really moving experience to be there.
Yeah, absolutely it was. It was a beautiful location, as you say, very serene, very respectful, just about as perfect as a place like that can be, and very conscious. You talk about allies, obviously the Canadian Air Force is a strong ally of the Royal Air Force. All of us that are on this deployment have been on many operational deployments before, and a common theme with all those operational deployments is us working with the Canadian Air Force. So great to show our respects to them on that particular time.
There were many STEM engagement activities, including presentations to local universities.
Corporal Adam Winfield, I'm a mechanical technician and I supervise any mechanical problems with the Hawk aircraft.
I'm AS1 Jordan Cullen, I'm an aircraft technician and we make the jets serviceable, changing parts, changing wheels.
What were the sort of questions like that the students were asking you?
They're all interested in career paths, how we got into it, essentially backgrounds, where we're all from and what we sort of do day to day, what our air shows like, travelling, how we get to places, things like that.
Were you surprised at how many students came out today to hear you talk?
Yeah, I was quite surprised by the amount of them, and a lot of them in their Air Force T-shirts and things like that, and a lot of them had a lot of knowledge of the aircraft that I wasn't really expecting to. They asked a lot of quite technical questions, a few of them about the smoke and die system, a few about the Hawk aircraft itself, and yeah, just some real technical questions about the aircraft and about the rest of the aircraft in the Air Force.
And tours to the local children's hospitals.
Well, the skies over Ottawa were buzzing yesterday as the Canadian Forces Snowbirds and the UK's Red Arrows performed a thrilling flypast ahead of this weekend's Gatineau Air Show. But today, they traded the cockpit for the classroom, making a special visit to young patients at CHEO.
Corporal Jessica Ware explained what it was like to meet the children and staff.
It was quite overwhelming, really. There's quite a lot going on emotionally. Quite a privilege to meet some of these children, very clever, bright, inspirational children. It really made me reflect on my own life and things that I can do better at home as well.
Is this part of the job something that you really enjoy doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting to be with people and the public, it's probably the best part of the job, without a doubt. interacting. This is the whole reason why we're here, is to engage with the public. So yeah, it's absolutely the best part of the job.
Throughout the tour of Canada, we were lucky enough to work with some other amazing display teams.
One of the most familiar, our friends, the Canadian Snowbirds.
Captain Edward Soy, Snowbird 10. So the Snowbirds, just like the RAF Red Arrows, are a formation aerobatic team that demonstrate the skill, professionalism and teamwork of the whole of the Canadian Forces. You know, as Commonwealth cousins, it's a real pleasure to deal with the UK in any context, but particularly given we're in the same line of work, it's been a real pleasure for us as well to work with the Red Arrows here in Canada.
It's a very, very special year for the Royal Canadian Air Force, the centenary. So many people are so proud of their heritage. It must be a very big moment for you.
Certainly, especially someone who really appreciates that history and has flown a number of vintage airplanes from the Air Force's history. It's really special to get to follow the good example that the RAF and the RAAA have sent in the last few years with their centenaries.
We also displayed with the US Thunderbirds, as Tech Sergeant Keith James explained. Seen you guys display the Thunderbirds. Let's start with the aircraft, because you're much noisier than the Red Arrows, aren't you?
Absolutely. So we fly the F-16 Fighting Falcon. It can push about 1.5 plus Mach speed. That's 1.5 times the speed of sound. So we don't fly that fast during the air show. If we did, we would hurt a lot of people's ears and probably break some windows. But during the show, we fly about 500 to 700 miles per hour. And depending on the air show site, we can fly as low as 100 feet above the ground or 1,000 feet ceiling. So when you come out to an air show, you can expect fast, loud, and beautiful aircraft flying in formations as close as 18 inches apart.
60 years of the Red Arrows.
BFBS.
The Forces Station. And as the 5 weeks in Canada came to an end, and the long journey home was now in sight, the 2024 team reflected on their incredible season. For some, their last as part of the Red Arrows.
My name is Flight Lieutenant Patrick Kershaw, and I am Red 9 for the Royal Air Force aerobatic team, the Red Arrows.
If you sum up your time in Canada, what would you say?
Exciting. It's just been a really exciting tour, done so many great things. Mixed formation fly pass with the Snowbirds, with the F-18, over Toronto. Displaying over Toronto was incredible, and then flying over Niagara, and then meeting the Canadian public as well.
And what's next for you?
So sadly, I've got to move on from the team. My 3 years has come to an end, so I look back at such fond memories as well. So I'm off down to a desk job in London, but exciting times doing that, something different. But yeah, definitely looking back on fond memories with the Red Arrows.
And if you could pick a career highlight, could you do that?
I'd have to say meeting Tom Cruise at Riyadh was definitely one of the highlights. But there's been so many. Jubilees, coronations. I think one that does really stand out was the D-Day commemorations this year, taking part in the flypast over France. Quite humbling, especially from Bournemouth, from the areas that those forces would have been amassing to go on that invasion, was really humbling as well.
Well, look, I wish you all the very best with your future. Your colleagues talk so warmly about you. I know that you're going to be missed. But for people listening to us today, that maybe they've come along to an air show, they've met you, they've met some of the other pilots, the ground crew, what would you say to them if they wanted to do something what you've done, or walk in your shoes one day?
I'd say don't ever doubt yourself. I never really kind of thought when I was younger that I'd end up doing something like this. I fell into it via the University Air Squadron and then kind of thought it was looked a good, fun, enjoyable career, so I'd give it a go. I applied for the Air Force and then got in, and then here I am now, 20 years later, flying as a member of the Red Arrows.
Squadrina Andy King, I'm the Senior Engineering Officer for the Royal Air Force Red Arrows.
And after meeting 100% of the flying requirement, I asked Squadron Leader King how the Blues had enjoyed their time in Canada.
It's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, we've been welcomed with open arms, and everyone in Canada has been really great, but we're here for the Canadian Air Force 100 as well. So to be part of that celebration, joining with the CF-18 demo team, the Snowbirds as well, and just be able to be part of a massive celebration of 100 years of the Royal Canadian Air Force and 60 years of the Red Arrows at the same time has just been absolutely brilliant, to be honest. It's one of the best things I've ever done in my career.
I'm Flight Lieutenant Oleg Shukling, and I'm Red 4, and this year's Royal Air Force aerobatic team, the Red Arrows.
Flight Lieutenant George Hobday, Red 5, and this year's Red Arrows.
hours.
Summing up your time in Canada, Ollie, I'll start with you first. What would you say about this five-week detachment?
It's been absolutely awesome. It's been great to meet so many people and to get the red, white and blue out there over the Canadian crowds. It's been a really warm reception from everywhere we've been and everybody we've met. So it's been great to come over here and represent the UK.
This is such an important year for the Reds. What does it mean to you to be flying in the 60th display season year?
It's all a bit surreal, to be honest. I mean, for years, all I wanted to be was a Red Arrows pilot, and now I've managed to do it and be during the 60th anniversary of one of the world's best aerobatic display teams. So, yeah, it's all a bit surreal, really, yeah. But very enjoyable, and I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it's a huge year for the Red Arrows and a huge year for the Royal Canadian Air Force as well. So a 60th for us, for the Red Arrows, and 100th for the Canadian Air Force. So it's pretty special. We've got the 60 written on our arms, and we've got the 60 written in the sky. So really enjoyable way to spend what has been a fantastic six decades of the Reds.
When we look back through those decades, is there something about the Red Arrows that just the first time you heard it, saw it, you thought, yes, that's where I want to be, that's where I belong?
I think for me, it was, I used to get taken to air shows by my dad, a local air show at Elvington, New York, and I've got stuff at home that's signed by the Red Arrows from like the early 90s. So for me, it was almost imprinted in my brain that it was what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve. So it's really cool to be able to do it now, and hopefully we'll be able to inspire those people that are coming to air shows and having a look. As kids, you know, you look up and you see all these beautiful shapes and colours, and it's pretty inspiring when you look up and realise that anybody can do it from all sorts of backgrounds. So it's just be able to great to represent the UK.
Flying as Red 4 and 5, what's your favourite manoeuvre, George?
Ooh, favourite manoeuvre. So to fly, I think it's got to be rollbacks because they're technically really quite challenging. But in terms of visuals, so on the camera, I think something like Phoenix looks really cool, and it doesn't get as much appreciation as it should do, because that is also really difficult to fly. It's a huge shape, and the further you are away from the boss, the harder it is to stay in the right position. Crowd favourites are always going to be something like Tornado, because they're visually stunning, it's very dynamic. 8 and 9 have definitely got the prize slot flying the rolls around that smoke. But for me, I think rollbacks personally, and Phoenix from looking at it from a visual perspective.
Amazing. Look, guys, I know that you have to go. You've got a briefing, and then you need to get into your aircraft and get airborne. If you could pick out one highlight from Maple Hawk, Ollie, I'll come to you first. What would it be?
I think it's got to be the flypasts. We did both in downtown Toronto, and then we landed at Hamilton, saw the beautiful Lancaster, and then got to fly over Niagara Falls. That was a pretty special day all round, not just for us, but for our circus as well, who were lucky enough to be in the back seats for the transit. So there was some great imagery from that, and yeah, it's amazing to be part of.
Quite bittersweet for some people that are leaving the Reds as well. I know there was a lot of emotion there. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I think so. Fortunately, not me or George, but for others on the team, their time is coming to an end. So I think they're just trying to enjoy every last moment, because it's not forever. So you've got to make the most of it.
Absolutely. And George, if I come to you, highlight from this tour?
I think it's got to be the reception we got getting out of the jets at Gatineau. The crowd there were absolutely fantastic. And I know we weren't blessed with fantastic weather, but they survived the rain and what I would associate with Glastonbury-type conditions. I mean, I regret I didn't have my wellies with me. But, yeah, the crowd stuck it out. And we got a fantastic reception getting out of the jets, trying to put on a show in what was very challenging conditions.
990 minutes of smoke on.
Smoke on.
15 public displays.
Beautiful day here in Toronto. So we're live to watch what we can see from the Canadian International Air Show 2024.
6 days of static displays.
I like it when you fly all around the skies.
Beautiful. Couldn't do better. Oh, loved it.
We always support the Red Arrows when they come over.
After 5 weeks in Canada, Exercise Maple Hawk draws to a close. As the 12 jets make their way back to the UK, I caught up with Red One squadron leader John Bond.
It's been fantastic. We've displayed at some amazing locations, flew over some iconic landmarks such as Niagara Falls, and being able to see all the people come through the air show, hand out all our flyers, speak to young children about what we do and how to potentially get into a career in the armed forces, a career in aviation, engineering, pilot, all of the varied jobs that are available. So the flying is very much one thing, but there's so much extra that the Red Arrows offer in terms of promoting the engineering and promoting aviation in general, and also flying the flag for the UK whilst we've been here in Canada. So there's a multi-strand event here, not just about the flying. The whole team, Blues and Reds, put so much into fulfilling a season every year, and you know, it's no mean feat. We're going to do over 60 shows this year. We've been pretty much across the world to North America, and you know, that takes a lot of doing from over 100 personnel strong team. And for us to get the appreciation or feel the appreciation from the crowd, both in the UK and when we've displayed in Europe and North America, means so much to us. You know, we will sit there and quite rightly so, analyse our display to the nth degree. There's no such thing as a perfect Red Arrows display. So, you know, we could come down from a show feeling quite disappointed, quite disheartened that we perhaps didn't fly it to the best of our ability. But then we're immediately perked up just by seeing the response from people of all ages, all backgrounds on the ground who have watched the show. And that gives us a big lift, especially if we've been a little bit disappointed with our show. When we come and meet the crowds at signing session, for example, after the show, to hear that feedback really lifts our spirits. And ultimately, that's our main job. And providing we're doing that, we're doing it safely and we're doing it effectively, then that gives us kind of the most gratification, I think, is just seeing the smiles and hearing the cheers. And the Canadian public have been incredibly supportive here, just as our own home crowd were when we were back in the UK during the beginning of the summer.
In marking 60 years of the Royal Air Force aerobatic team, the Red Arrows, we look to the future. The planned out-of-service date for the Hawk T1 aircraft remains 2030, and a decision on a replacement aircraft will be discussed and no doubt debated at length after the strategic defence review is completed. But for now, just like the excited media huddle in Iceland and the millions of fans who turned out in Canada, we can look to the skies for that vivid red, white and blue banner that proudly represents the work of each and every member of the UK Armed Forces. The Red Arrows at 60 was created with historical audio, with thanks to the Imperial War Museums and with the support of the Royal Air Force. On air, online, on the app,
on FM,
and DAB Plus throughout the UK. This is BFBS, the Forces Station.